When teaching a child to ride a bike, there are two basic lessons, big lessons, that you want them to get down. The first lesson is how to go. And the second lesson is equally important, how to stop. How to stop. Without fail, with all three of my kids, I remember distinctively running behind them, holding the back of their seat, you know, as the training wheels have been shed into the front yard, and then to let go and to see them autonomous, on their own, experiencing freedom. And as they did that, every one of them, you know what happened, right? Every one of them forgot what I told them to do, what I trained them to do. That is, they forgot how to stop. And there's something interesting that happens when you are riding your bike for the very first time without the training wheels on your own and you forget how to stop. There is a tractor beam that pulls you into parked cars, large curves, or trees, without fail, every one of my kids. They forgot how to stop. When I was 10 years old, my teenage neighbor, William, came over and said, "Hey, Jake, I have a really good idea. How about this? How about if you grab your skateboard, grab onto the back of my pickup truck, and let's go for a ride?" God gives parents to kids for a reason, doesn't he? And I said, "That sounds great. Let's do it." And so I grabbed onto the back of his pickup truck. And on Granada Boulevard in Fontana, California, on a street that resembles Front Street in Shelton, which also resembles a moonscape or the backside of the moon, the guy gunned it. And there I was holding on for dear life, and I began to scream, please stop, screaming for him to stop. He couldn't hear me, and he couldn't see me because of a camper shell over the bed of his truck. And at some point, I started to experience something I never experienced before. It felt like the space-time continuum was bending as my skateboard started to wobble, something called speed wobbles. And I knew at that time I was going to have to let go and let God, right? And so I knew I would have to let go, and I let go, and I knew I would have to jump. And so I jumped. My body was flung onto that gritty asphalt. Tumbled down the road like a pair of shoes in an empty dryer, leaving a little bit of my flesh and ego behind on Granada Boulevard. The funny thing about that, because there's nothing funny about what I just said there, is that William kept driving for about a quarter of a mile until he was stopped by the next stop sign, at which point he realized that I was infirmed on the ground in the middle of the road. William forgot how to stop. That's the idea of the fourth commandment. The fourth commandment is God telling us, don't forget to stop. The word Sabbath, which occurs 140 times in the Bible, literally means to stop, to cease, and desist. God is saying, you can work your 6 days, but make sure you stop. You take a time out. You take a break. You rest. And that's in order. And that's for you and your good so that you don't crash and burn. Remember the Sabbath, he says, to make it holy. And I think that if there's any group of people in the world who need to hear and heed this commandments, that would happen to be us Americans. You know, 9 times out of 10, when I ask people, how are you doing? They say, I'm busy. And they give me the look that they are overcommitted, that they are overworked, and that they are exhausted. We are absolutely exhausted as a country. The U.S. happens to be the most overworked developed nation in the world. We work 137 hours more per year than Japanese workers, 260 hours more than British workers, and 500 hours more than French workers. I'm moving to France. And even when we are technically off the clock, we're still on the clock because technology brings our work right to our dinner tables and living rooms and nightstands. We're getting texts and voicemails and, you know, IMs and all sorts of information streaming into our lives, intruding into our family time, so much so that many of us are sleepless at night because we get that text from our boss or from that worker saying that this responsibility is looming the next day, and we end up taking those responsibilities into a sleepless night. We have a hard time resting. We have a hard time not stopping. 50% of Americans who work 50 hours or more a week say that they do not take all or most of their vacation days. 30% say that when they do take their vacation days, they end up just taking a substantial amount of work with them on vacation. We have a hard time resting in this country. I can't help but to think of the satirical news headline that reads like this: man on the cusp of having fun suddenly remembers every single one of his responsibilities. Oh, the tension that we carry with us throughout are weak. And then if it's not work, it's, I mean, our family, we get up at 5:30 and we're not in bed until about 10 at night, and we're getting up and kids are being carted to and fro and we're working, and there are those activities, those Bible studies, those opportunities, those appointments. Saturdays are a divide and conquer day. You take those kids, I'll take that kid, and we'll meet somewhere mid-afternoon if we're lucky. And then when we do get a little bit of downtime, I mean, we're thinking about, what can we do? We got to do something, right? We got to go somewhere. We got to see something. We just can't just sit around, right? Because that's being slothful and lazy. Man, we have a hard time chilling out. And it's taking its toll on our emotions, on our bodies, on our relationships, and especially in our relationship with God. People are burning out. Dr. Matthew Sleeth writes in a book entitled 24-6, A Prescription for a Healthier, Happy Life. He says the World Health Organization says that somewhere between 1 in 9 and 1 in 10 of Americans are being treated for depression. We work more hours than any other country in the world. And when we are constantly going, our bodies are pouring out chemicals trying to meet the demand of those stresses. We have short-term stress hormones like adrenaline and longer-term hormones like steroids that our body produces, but those chemicals constantly being on is really bad for us. It leads to anxiety, depression, diabetes, obesity, among a number of health problems. He says if you give someone an adrenaline shot at the doctor, yeah, they'll be awake for the next hour, but after that hour, they will crash and burn in fatigue, and that will continue with them for the rest of the day. Dr. Matthew Sleeth says that we are effectively doing that with our schedule. We're just pouring out adrenaline, and we are absolutely exhausted. Now, his solution to this maddening pace sounds awfully familiar. He says, why don't you do this? Why don't you take one day off out of 7 and really rest? He says that there's something about our biology that when we really rest one day, it resets the mind, the soul, the body. Well, that's what God's saying in Exodus 20, verse 8. He says, I want you to remember the Sabbath. Keep it sacred. Guard your time. It's so much more than a day off. It's the rest of your week. The rest of your week is affected by that day off. So this morning, I want us to remember the Sabbath. I want us to keep it holy. And to do that, I want to answer 3 questions. Number 1, what is it? Number two, why do we need it? Number three, how do we keep it? So what is it? Why do we need it? How do we keep it? Number one, what is it? It goes without saying, but I have to say it because it doesn't go without saying it. The Sabbath is a command. Notice how it's almost right in the middle of the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath. Remember, let's not mistake what that means. Moses or God is not saying, let's reminisce about the Sabbath. No more than when a parent says, remember to brush your teeth and comb your hair and wear deodorant. Or when your creditor sends you a bill saying, remember to pay your bill. They aren't saying, let's walk down memory lane and think about the good old days when you practiced personal hygiene or fiscal responsibility. Remembering doesn't mean just thinking about looking at the good old days. It is a positive way of declaring a commandment. Remember the Sabbath is the same thing as saying, thou shalt take a weekly time out. And you need to hear the command part of that, because of all of the commandments that there are listed for us in Exodus 20, this is the one that we take as a suggestion rather than a directive. For whatever reason, this is the one that we think this is optional. If I take a Sabbath off, yeah, or if I don't, it really doesn't matter, as if that were up to us. And that's not up to us, no more than worshiping other gods or making graven images or committing adultery or coveting is up to us. No Christian would ever brag, yeah, I worshiped other gods today. I coveted, I committed adultery, and yet it's so easy. It's so easy in our American culture where we are self-made and we are successful because we work. It's easy for us to almost brag, I haven't taken a day off in 3 weeks. Look at me. I've violated a commandment of God. For some reason, we detach this one from the other 9, and you can't. This one flows so naturally, for example, from the first 3. And the first commandment, God says, I want your heart. The second, he says, I want your mind. The third, he says, I want your behavior. And the fourth, he says, I want your time. But he can't have your time and not have your heart and your mind and your strength. And he can't have your mind, heart, and strength unless he has your time. God says, your time belongs to me. So what is the Sabbath? The most basic definition is it is a commandment to take one day off out of 7 to relax, to chill. Number two, why do we need it? Why do we need it? Well, the big answer is this. A weekly Sabbath is a weekly reminder of truths that we tend to forget weekly. It's a weekly reminder of truths that we forget weekly. How about this truth? The truth, number one, that he comes first. Can we say that together just to make sure that you're awake? Some of you are nodding off, and that's fine because you're taking your Sabbath here. That's wonderful. Let's say it together. He comes first. Verse 10, the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. Whatever this day is about, it has a God reference. God is saying you slam on the brakes of your crazy, busy life, and you do that unto him. You do that in light of him, because of him. You slam on the craziness of your life to get the godness of God in front of you, his value, his preeminence. Because as we know, we tend to forget that he comes first. Every single day, we forget that he comes first. And so God says, as a grace to you, knowing your frailty, I got one day out of seven for you to really stop and focus in on me so that that may spill over into your Monday through Saturday. It's to get me first in your life. It's not unlike the biblical principles behind financial stewardship. Here's the reality. I know this is hard to deal with, but the reality is that you own nothing. You don't own a thing. God owns everything. He is the owner. We are the managers. But come on, you know what happens. We tend to think that we're the owners. This is mine, my money, my time. This is mine. I worked for it. And God says, no, it all belongs to me. And because you are so forgetful about me being first in your finances, this is what I want you to do. Before you pay off or begin to pay that Prius off or get that Papa Murphy's Cowboy special pizza, before you do anything like that, I want you to stop and I want you to give me the first fruits of your finances. And I want that to be a proportion that hurts a little bit. And I want you to do that not merely so that my gospel purposes will be funded in the world. Certainly, that's a part of it. But I also want you to do this because this is me reorienting your heart to look away from money as your provider and to look to me. To see that I am the one who owns everything and that you depend upon me for everything. And so to flex the muscle in your heart to not replace me with money, I want you to give a little bit. And as we give, you know, it always hurts, right? Because that could always go to something else. We give it, and in that, the muscle is flexing. Our heart is being reoriented, and we're saying, you know what? Yeah, God, you are first, even in my finances. With the Sabbath, God is saying, just as you give of your money, you give me the first fruits of your time. You tithe your week. You give a portion of your week to me. And what this does, among many things, is that it reorients your heart towards me. Because God knows that if we don't tithe our time, everything is going to fill that spot that belongs to God and God only. Hobbies will fill that time. Boating on beautiful lakes in Mason County will fill that time. Opportunities, interactions will fill that time. And so God says, to not forget me in your life, you tithe your time. I don't get leftovers. I get the first fruits of your calendar. So the weekly Sabbath reminds me that he comes first. That's number one. Number two, the weekly Sabbath reminds me weekly that I am not enough. Can we say that together just to wake you up for the second round? I am not enough. You see, the Sabbath reminds us that God created us as finite creatures, built in with limitations and boundaries that we need to respect because we are creatures, to respect in order for us to flourish. And if we don't respect those boundaries and those God-given creative limitations, we will burn out. Remember what we said about freedom a couple of weeks ago. Freedom isn't the absence of limitations in your life. Now, that's anarchy, and anarchy is always bad for you. True freedom, instead, is the presence of the right limitations in your life, getting the right ones in your life. My car thrives when it is on a paved road. It doesn't thrive when it's in a lake. I recognize the limitations of design, and I honor that. My cell phone is amazing in my ear, horrible at the bottom of my toilet. I respect the limitations. God gave commandments, and that tells us a little bit about how we are wired to either flourish, or if we ignore those commandments, how we will flounder. And so God says, you want to be free, you want to have the most out of life, you want to flourish, I got some truths for you to embrace. And what can be more practical than the truth that we need to rest? We have to rest. Parents of small children know this, right? You know your toddlers, they are built in with this biological need to take a nap every single day. So do older adults, right? Older adults. And if we violate that creative design, if we buck the system and says, who needs an afternoon nap? They will implode. They will fall to the ground. They will flop on the ground. They will cause misery to themselves and to other people. And that's also true of children. That's also true of children. Our bodies need at least 6 hours of sleep every 24 hours. And we can say, in the name of freedom, I shall not be bound by 6 hours of sleep. I shall claim all 24 hours of wakefulness. You could do that all you want, but you know, you will spoil your 24 hours, right? You don't get more, you get so much less. And so you respect the God-given limitations. Well, the same God who created toddlers and older people to need a daily nap and created us to require a daily sleep, a week sleep cycle, is the same God who gave us a weekly rest cycle. He says 1 out of 7, you take that day off. If you don't, you're not going to get more out of your week. You will get less out of your week. The children of Israel here, as you recall in Exodus chapter 20, they were slaves just 3 months prior to the giving of this particular commandment. And as slaves, they were much like Americans. They worked 7 days a week. Like Americans, they were overcommitted. They kept going and going and going, and they were burning out. And so God says, I'm going to save you. And a part of that salvation is this: you take a time off. In other words, you need to stop acting like slaves. You see, freedom and rest go hand in hand. Nonstop busyness leads to slavery. Overcommitted, crazy busy, I can't say no to anyone. That's a recipe for slavery in your life. And some of you are precisely that. You are saying yes to way too many people, too many opportunities, too many good things, and you are a functional slave. And God is telling you this morning, it's time to get your priorities in order. I want that one day. It's for your good. You'll get more out of your life, more out of your week, more out of your experience if you obey my word on this. And so the second reason why we need a weekly time out is because it reminds me that I am not enough. Thirdly, the reason why we need a weekly timeout is that it reminds us weekly of what we tend to forget, namely, of where true rest is found. Where true rest is found. Maybe you had this experience. You are about to begin vacation. So you got a couple of weeks off, and you are packing up the family van. We, as your neighbors, we are looking on with jealousy that you get to go on vacation and we don't. And there you are, and you're already rested, man. You got the sunglasses on, the flip-flops, the board shorts, the tank top. The kids are playing in the lawn, getting ready to jump in the van to make their way. Husband and wife are smooching. I mean, the rest is beginning even before you leave the driveway. And as you leave, we wave goodbye. goodbye to you, looking on with great envy that you get some much-needed R&R. And all of that is wonderful on the outside. It looks great until you pull on to Interstate 101 off of Wallace-Neyland Boulevard, because that's when it happens. The tension begins to build. On the outside, you're looking great. We're on vacation. But the kids are fighting in the back seat over who gets to play with the iPad. The driver of the car is so mad that the spouse didn't fill up the tank yesterday when she had the opportunity to. You're at a quarter of a tank and you have to stop in Olympia, which you don't want to do. And as you're driving along, the driver begins to grow tense because, oh, I have to go through Seattle, and how we hate to drive through Seattle. And so we go from one hand to two hands on the wheel, and we're tense right in the neck. And now we're beginning to look for alternative routes, and we're veering off and on the road, and the family is yelling at us because we're violating the law for trying to find alternative routes on our phone. Oh, on the outside, it looks glorious. You're on your way to vacation, and yet on the inside, there's toil and strife and fighting. And then you ask the question, did anyone remember the address to the hotel or the reservation number? And the answer is no. And you seethe under your skin because you have to do all the work to make this vacation work. And then you remember. You remember that you forgot to set the sprinklers for your lawn, which you worked on all spring, and now it's going to be burnt to a crisp by the time that you get back. You remember that you forgot to pay the cable bill, which is about to be shut off. You start thinking about all of the food you have to buy for all of these kids with tapeworms in their bellies. And you're thinking about the hotel rooms and you know the price of admission to these theme parks and $4 a gallon gas. Oh Lord, you're not enjoying your life. And that's about the time that little Susie says, I have to go pee. Little Bobby says he's hungry, even though you had breakfast an hour ago. And little Billy just spilled soda all over the back seat. And so the husband starts yelling at the kids. The wife starts yelling at the husband for yelling at the kids. And the kids start yelling at the husband and wife for yelling at each other. On the outside, it's glorious, but on the inside, contention and strife. 7 days later, back from Wally World, you're pulling into town, and we're waving at you. We look on with jealousy that you got 7 days of rest. Oh, how unfair that is. And you're doing this as you're driving through the neighborhood. It looks so glorious on the outside, but inwardly, what's happening? You need family and marriage counseling ASAP. Now, that is a picture, by the way, of the universal human condition. The Bible teaches us that every one of us, though on the outside we may seem fine and we may have it all together, but on the inside there is exhausting work taking place. There is toil and strife and angst. On the outside, we may look fine, but on the inside, there is a deep restlessness in our heart. Every one of us, apart from the gospel, we suffer from restless soul syndrome. Every one of us, inside, toil and tension and angst. The Bible says that there's eternity set in our hearts, and that is made damaging with sin, because instead of looking to eternity, we look to earthly things to try to fill that eternal void. And as we wrestle with that internal restlessness, it's there regardless of whether we are resting or working. In fact, that internal restlessness that we have because we are separated from God, apart from Jesus, makes our work exhausting and makes our rest unsatisfying. And it really is not a matter about the quality of the work or the rest outside of you. It's all about the absence of deep rest on the inside of you. And so you can vacation all of your life. You can take every cruise ship out there imaginable. You can have every luxury. You can have your toes, you know, with white sand in between them as you experience the cool breeze off of a tropical sea. And yet on the inside, the Bible says you can be slaving, full of angst and exhaustion. That's every one of us apart from Jesus. Now the question is, why are we so restless on the inside? What are we so exhausted by? And the answer is, and you got to listen carefully to this because this applies to us today, even as Christians. The answer is that we are exhausted trying to work for a kind of salvation in our lives. We are exhausted trying to create value and approval by which we can approve of ourselves and we can get other people to approve of us. We are trying to justify our existence. We are trying to show people that our life is meaningful and it deserves to be here. And so we work and we wrestle trying to create this value to make the case before ourselves and the world and to God that we are good enough. I think this is what Tim Kreider was alluding to in his article entitled The Busy Trap, where he says, busyness serves as a kind of personal reassurance, a hedge against emptiness. Because obviously your life cannot possibly be silly or trivial or meaningless if you are so busy, completely booked, and in demand every hour of the day. In other words, we stay busy to try to fill that hole. We stay busy to try to make the case to ourselves and others that we are worthy enough. In the movie Chariots of Fire, the Olympic athlete Harold Abrams is getting ready to race that big race. And this is what he says as his heart is filled with angst. He says, now, in 1 hour's time, I will be out there again with 10 lonely seconds to justify my existence. But will I? Will I? 10 lonely seconds to justify my existence, to prove that I'm worthy, to prove that I'm valuable. The Bible says that that is the soulish toil beneath all of our rest and our work. That in every one of us, so much of what we do is driven by the attempts to justify ourselves to ourselves and to the world, to show that we are worthy. But here's the problem. You are never made to rest in your work. You are never made to find your ultimate value and significance in your busyness, in what you do. In fact, if you try to do that, you will end up exhausted, both for time and for eternity. This is why when the Bible describes the gospel, one of the most beautiful pictures that it gives of the gospel is portraying it as the ultimate Sabbath of the soul. The gospel, what Jesus did for us, provides for us the ultimate rest of the soul. And think about how that works out. So the Old Testament, we have this little shadowy preview of what God was going to do for us in Jesus. In the Old Testament, here in Exodus chapter 20, God says, watch this, I will create creation in this allotted period of time. And Adam and Eve, you do nothing to contribute to that work. You don't lift a finger to make this happen. I do it, and it's me alone. Watch what I do. And so God creates the heavens and the earth in 6 days, as Exodus 20 says. And then after the 6 days, God turns to Adam and Eve, who are created on that sixth day, and God says, okay, now that I've done the work, you contribute nothing to it. This is what I want you to do. Rest. Relax. Enjoy what I've done for you. The New Testament says that God in the person of Christ does a work even greater than creation. It is called redemption. God creates a new heavens and a new earth, a new creation, all rooted in Jesus. He creates salvation. He does it all by himself. You don't lift a finger to contribute to that completed work. You add nothing to it. It's complete. It's intact. And God says, having worked redemption for you, having created salvation for you, you don't lift a finger. All I want you to do is to rest in that work by faith alone. The author of Hebrews says this, Hebrews 4:3, and we who have believed in Jesus and what he has done for us on the cross, living, dying, and rising for us, have entered the deeper rest of the soul. For whoever has entered into God's rest, his deep rest, has also rested from his own works as God did from his. What the author is saying there is that God, the creator in the person of Jesus, entered into his creation that is tired and exhausted and restless because of our sin and rebellion. And our creator steps into that restlessness and to our exhaustion. He bears on his brow the thistles born out of the garden as a curse to our work. He bears those thorns on his brow. On the cross, he was restless. He was in anguish. On the cross, he bore what your sin caused in your life. He bore eternal restlessness, separated from his Father on the cross, also that you can come unto him, as he calls out, you who are burdened and heavy laden, and that he might give you rest for your soul. You come, you embrace, you enjoy, you do nothing to lift a finger. Adam and Eve were simply to be satisfied with the finished work. God is calling us in this greater work of salvation to see it and to be satisfied with it as it is, as we trust in him. You see, we need that weekly reminder. We need to be reminded weekly. This is why we have Sabbath every single Sunday. We need to be reminded of where true rest is found. And I'll tell you why. By Tuesday, I'm already slaving for significance. By Tuesday, I'm already trying to create my own worth, my own value, to convince myself that I'm good enough, I'm worthy enough, and to try to convince you that I am as well, and God. By Wednesday, I'm feeling either proud or defeated by that. If I'm having a good week, I'm proud. If I'm having a bad week, I am crushed. And by Thursday, I'm exhausted because we forget the gospel. My job is amazing here. I get to do one thing every single week. I get to tell you the gospel again. Now, we look at it differently. It's found in different passages. But that's what God has designed this gathering for, to remind forgetful people of where true rest is found. Let's talk about how to keep it, and this will be quick and practical. Number one, how do we keep the Sabbath? And I've already said it, you rest in Jesus by faith alone if you haven't this morning. And so maybe you're not a Christian, and you are hearing the claims of Jesus. And I want you, as you hear the claims of Jesus, to hear the call of Jesus to you as he's calling you to cease from striving to make yourself acceptable before God, yourself, and others. A God who doesn't want you to toil for things that will end up making you exhausted for time and eternity. And he's calling out to you this morning, come unto me. I've done the work for you. I've labored for you. I ran the race for you. I toiled on the cross for you. I have rest for you to embrace by faith. Will you do that this morning if you aren't a Christian? In your heart of hearts, say, God, come into my life. Bring that rest of salvation. That's number one. Number two, okay, this is, you know, obvious. Take a day off, folks. And let it be a real day off, not one of those fake day offs that you guys have where you end up doing all sorts of work in the name of a day off. I think this is why in verse 11, God says, oh, by the way, this applies not just to you, but also your spouse and your kids and your employees and your guinea pigs and chinchillas or whatever crazy vermin you have in your house. Everyone in your house, you stop and you drop and you worship and you rest. You take a real time out. Do you take that time out? I know it's hard. I know it's hard, but hear the lesson. God loves you. And he says, that is not conducive for your flourishing. Take a real day off. Number three, go to church. Go to church. Both Old and New Testament expressions of the Sabbath, though they occur on different days, the Sabbath was a time for believers to get together and to hear the gospel once again, to be reminded that he's first, I'm not enough, and where true rest is found. And they would hear the gospel, and they would respond with worship and prayer, and they would go into their little families and maybe bigger groups, and they would playfully and prayerfully relax for the remainder of the day. Go to church. Now maybe you say, well, I have to work sometimes on Sundays. Or maybe all the time on Sundays. Okay. Go to a Saturday night service somewhere. Or how about on that weekday when you can rest, find a small group and make that the place where you culminate your day of rest, getting focused in on God. There are solutions here, solutions for you to connect God, worshiping with other people, and the day of rest. And lastly, you need to start saying no, even when it hurts. You need to start saying no. The reality of being a follower of Jesus means that you have to say no to a lot of good things in order to say yes to him. Sometimes it means saying no to that promotion offer at your work, because it will tack on another 15 hours and so many responsibilities that will leave you absolutely miserable and cranky to the rest of the people in your life. And it feels like you're giving up something by foregoing that in order to maintain that posture of work and rest. But I'm telling you, notice that the Sabbath is blessed, not 7 days of work. Saying no is blessed. The Sabbath is you saying no. And the fact is, if you're saying yes to people and things and hobbies and to all sorts of wonderful things, at some point of saying yes to so many things, you end up invariably having to say no to God, because you only have so much time. And so find what's most important in life and learn to say no even to the good things in life, so that you may say yes to the best things in life. That's how we keep it. There are many more lessons we can derive from that. I'll just entrust this text to you to go home and to work through it and think about the application of it in your lives. But here's the call. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. God, we thank you for Jesus. He was a man who toiled, who was in anguish, who suffered, who was exhausted, who was sleepless. God, he wasn't doing that for him. He was doing that for us. He was bearing our restlessness, our sin, our shame. God, help us to see that he's so much better at that than we are. God, for us to give up the toil in our hearts that we're born into this world with, trying to create our value, to prove ourselves before ourselves, the world, and you. God, help us to give up that exhausting, futile task and to look at the completed work of Jesus and to rest in his work alone. And Lord, that is not just a struggle for someone who's not believing today. That is the struggle for every believer, because tomorrow, or maybe Tuesday, given that we have a 3-day weekend, the slaving will begin. The toil will begin. And God, we need to be reminded of the sufficiency of Jesus to stop working and to enter into that Sabbath rest. Lord, help us to be practical about this. God, help us to apply wisdom, to look at our calendars, to look at the things that we have said yes to, and to really step back and to see whether or not they are intruding in on that tithe of time that you ask of us for your glory and our good. God, we don't hear messages like this often, and so I pray we won't have to, because we've heard this, we have heeded, and we've walked away doers and not just hearers of the word. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.